Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and when Trump became president, he promised to cut red tape and aggressively roll back government regulation. In February, Trump signed an executive order that told every federal agency to create something called a deregulatory task force, a team of people whose mission it is to find regulations that could be reduced or eliminated. This week, the New York Times and ProPublica published an investigation into who sits on these task forces, finding a string of possible conflicts, including some hires who have links to businesses that may be reviewing rules their previous employers tried to weaken or kill, and others who may personally profit if certain regulations are changed. Here with me now to discuss their reporting are Danielle Ivory, reporter at the New York Times covering the Trump administration, and Robert Federici, reporter at ProPublica covering politics. Robert and Danielle, welcome both of you to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
So in some instances, these deregulation teams I see have been soliciting public feedback, while others refuse to even disclose who's in charge of the review. So Robert, how would you describe, to start out, the transparency when it comes to these deregulation task forces? How much digging did you have to do even to get the names of the members?
Not good. So these are public task forces, and when we first embarked on this, we figured, getting the names of these appointees would be the easy part, and digging into their backgrounds would be the hard part. But we filed tons of FOIAs, public records requests. We reached out to officials within these agencies, and I mean, it varied by agency, but we had a hard time even getting the names for a lot of folks. I mean, one agency, for example, would only give us the titles of the appointees and not give us the names. Others just would not respond to our requests. So it has not been a very transparent process.
I see, Danielle, that at one point you dug through like 1,300 pages of handwritten sign-in sheets at the Department of the Interior. What did you find there?
We did. We ended up getting our hands on about 13,000 pages of these sign-in sheets where, when you visit a building, you sign in the lobby. And what we did is split them up and just looked for every meeting with a task force member at the Department of Interior. And we ended up finding that Scott Cameron, who is a newly minted official at the department, who had left a nonprofit that he had founded that was funded by a pesticide company called Syngenta, one of his first meetings that he had as an interior official was with one of the top lobbyists for Syngenta, that pesticide company.
Give me another example, Danielle. I see that you found at the Education Department that one of the task force members was an executive handling regulatory issues at a for-profit college. And sure enough, they're rolling back regulations now on for-profit colleges, right?
Yeah, the Department of Education has been looking at that. And the Department of Education has actually also put out a report saying that they are looking at a specific regulations that they may be targeting for a complete rollback or streamlining in some cases. So it looks like the Department of Education will be a place to focus on in the coming months.
And Robert, tell me about another name in your reporting, Samantha Dravis. Am I saying that right? She chairs the deregulation team at the EPA.
Yeah, so she came from an industry-funded Republican group that focuses on state attorneys general. This is a group that's been criticized as an avenue for corporate interests to get the credibility of state attorneys general and to get access to them, to push them to challenge, Obama-era regulations. She was a top executive at that group, and she, like you said, she now heads up the deregulation team at the EPA. One thing we tried to do was to figure out who she had been meeting with since she took on this job. And the spokeswoman for the agency told us, you know, just go ahead and file a public records request for her calendar. We're not going to tell you, but, you know, if you can get this calendar. And we told her, you know, we had already filed a public records request for that calendar. And the response, you know, did not include the calendar. You know, we have appealed that and hopefully we'll be getting it soon to see who she's been meeting with and who is potentially influencing her and whether any of those groups are past funders of the Republican Attorneys General Association that she used to work at.
Listeners, any questions for my guests about deregulation and the Trump administration's deregulation task force teams and some of the conflicts or potential conflicts of interest revealed by my reporters in their front page New York Times story yesterday, Danielle Ivory from The Times and ProPublica's Robert Federici, their joint investigation this week called The Deep Industry Ties of Trump's Deregulation Teams, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for these two journalists doing exactly what journalists are supposed to do, dogged digging into non-transparent conflicts of interest in government. And big picture, Robert, you identified 71 appointees thus far, and of those, you identified 28 who had potential conflicts of interest. So how would you describe the big picture?
So, I mean, the way I see it is, it's not, you know, administrations of both parties have come into office promising to cut red tape. You know, a Republican president is obviously going to have, you know, a more deregulatory framework. And, you know, a lot of these appointees had come from previous government posts where they worked for lawmakers, or what have you, who have that bent themselves. But that's not, those aren't the kinds of appointees we are focusing on. We focused on appointees who actually came from industry groups or companies that have interacted with or are regulated by these agencies. And we found that, you know, many of them, you know, have those links and have those potential conflicts. And a couple even stand to potentially profit if particular regulations are changed.
So, Danielle, here's an interesting tweet from a listener who writes, "We already know Trump hires cronies. His followers like that. Unless you show specific harm to individuals, public won't act." What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think that it's a little bit early in the process. These task forces in some cases are still being formed. Some of them have just turned in reports saying what regulations they're looking at. But, I mean, the bottom line is that Robert and I are going to continue reporting on this and keeping an eye on it. And actually, the New York Times and ProPublica are asking readers to help us out, because even though we have identified, as you mentioned, 71 appointees, there are still more on these task forces. And we've asked for correspondence and calendars of these task force members at all of these agencies and have gotten zero back on that front, except for some correspondence from the Small Business Administration. So we have done call-outs on both of our organizations' websites asking people who work in federal government or might have come in contact with these task forces through their companies or organizations to please reach out to us and tell us who is on these task forces, what are they doing, what are their priorities. And you can email us at taskforce@nytimes.com or at taskforce@propublica.org. And also, Robert and I have our Signal numbers on each website if you want to contact us through encrypted chat.
So you're crowdsourcing this because you don't know who knows who knows something about whoever those whos are, right? So you're crowdsourcing this to the public is what you were just saying.
Right, right. I mean, just in the same way that having both my brain and Robert's brain on this makes this into a better story, we think that having readers help us out is going to make our future reporting even more robust.
212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 to talk to Danielle Ivory from The Times and Robert Federici from ProPublica on their joint story on the front page of The Times yesterday. And we'll get into some more of the details and take your phone calls for them right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Danielle Ivory, New York Times correspondent covering the Trump administration, and Robert Federici, reporter at ProPublica, on their joint investigation into who sits on the deregulation task forces that the Trump administration has set up in various agencies and what their possible conflicts of interest are that could lead deregulation not in the public interest. Jack in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks, Brian. Love the show, which is more important than ever. I'd like to ask the reporters, do you have any sense of where these hires are coming from? Are they coming from, is this an effort that's being directed by the White House, or is this coming from the heads of each individual agency or department?
Who wants it?
So the executive order that President Trump signed, it stated that the agency head gets to make the decision as to who within their agency they appoint to the task force. It also creates the potential for the agency head to appoint nothing but political appointees. And, you know, for folks who are familiar with government, it's typically, political appointees or career staff, apolitical, employees are typically more wedded to their agency's rules. So it creates, one of our experts said, if there is a deep state effect taking place, it creates more of an opportunity for the political side of things to push back and get changes through.
Another name that you found is Maren Casper. She's the head of the deregulatory team at HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and she was previously the director of Roofstock, an online marketplace for investors in single-family rental properties. So which one of you was on this, and how could that present a conflict of interest?
Well, Maren Casper actually has left the task force, so I just want to make sure that's clear. Mm-hmm. But she was the one who helped launch it at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And she also holds some stock in that company up to $50,000. So she has actually signed a limited waiver that allows her to hold that stock, that is in order to not violate HUD's internal policy. But because she holds that, and because Roofstock could be affected by HUD regulations, we feel that she is someone who may potentially profit if regulations are changed at HUD.
Peter in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The implication, it seems, in a lot of this is that hiring people from industry is bad. And I know, I appreciate the work that you all are doing. I think it's actually valuable work. But if these people that are getting hired have the necessary expertise and don't have any significant conflicts of interest, then I really don't have any problem with it. And it seems to me that a lot of the underlying implication of this is people from industry working to deregulate it is a bad thing. I mean, and I have pushback at that.
Who wants to talk to Peter?
Sure, I'll take that. So, I mean, I just want to make a clear distinction about what we do and the purpose of the article. We are not insinuating that anything is, bad or good. What we're trying to do is make sure that the process is as transparent as possible. So folks like your caller can look at who these appointees are, first of all, know what their names are, know what their backgrounds are, know what their potential conflicts are, and like he said, their potential expertises, and be able to evaluate whether or not they think this person is a good appointee. And it's very satisfying to me that someone with the perspective that your caller has, read about these appointees and was able to make a decision based on the information we were able to get out there. I mean, we're not advocating for anything but transparency here. That's not the insinuation that we intend to make or that we did make.
Peter, where would you draw the line? Because one could argue, and I see the tension here. On the one hand, let's say you come from the auto industry. You know a lot about the auto industry, so then you'd be a good person to go into the branch of government that regulates the auto industry in a certain respect. On the other hand, you might be so tied in, even subconsciously, to the interests of the auto companies and the arguments that they've made throughout your career at wherever you worked, that you're not going to see the public interest as clearly as somebody who didn't work in the field.
I totally understand that, and I have an expertise in a certain field which is often maligned in the press. I know the digital advertising market world very well, and there are a lot of privacy issues. And I know that if I were in a situation, should I be in the situation of deregulating or proposing regulations, I would have a certain mindset. I think that's perfectly fair and honest. I mean, experts may not have an ability to see the whole picture, but ideally a good administrator or department head would be able to suss through the problems that a expert from mm-hmm. a field or industry might the biases they mm-hmm. might have, but there's just no getting around the fact that an industry person who is steeped in all the features and has seen up close and has a valuable perspective to bring to the job.
Thank you for your call. I really appreciate it, Danielle from the Times. You know, the Trump administration has really been boasting at every opportunity about the deregulation effort. It's one of the things that they can point to that they're actually getting done because it's through the executive branch, when the legislation like healthcare and other things has been so stalled, the things that have to go through Congress. I'm curious if there are any claims, even as you guys look at the potential conflicts of interest on the deregulatory task forces, that deregulation is working in the public interest, like to create more jobs or better wages, because that's the point, right? They would say, we're not deregulating just to deregulate or to let special interest industries off the hook. It's because we're taking off regulations that aren't really necessary, and this is going to allow economic growth. Is it too early for them to make any such claims of outcomes yet?
It may be a little too early for making claims of outcomes, but I think it's important to point out that the Trump administration is not the first presidential administration to try to make an effort to streamline, cut regulations, cut red tape, so-called red tape. Every administration going back to President Carter has made some sort of effort to do this. The Trump administration, we felt that what was different about it was one, the lack of transparency that we have encountered, and then also there seems to be an empowering of political appointees to make decisions, and finally that there seems to be an emphasis on eliminating entire regulations. But I would also say that, in this reporting, we've talked to a lot of people on both sides of this issue. And Robert and I come at this issue not from the position of all regulations are good or all regulations are bad. We just think that they're very complicated and they're very important. And there are stakeholders on either side. And, for example, it's not just big industry groups that are coming in and asking for deregulation. We spoke to the owner of a local painting company who had spoken at an EPA public hearing about this. He said at the hearing that he was very frustrated because before he could do a painting job, he needed to test for lead. And in order to do that in a house, he needed to buy these test kits. They cost, I think, about $2 a kit, and then for every room, he'd need about 6 of those kits. And for him, that was very costly, especially if he then didn't get hired.
And we have to leave it there because we're out of time. It is interesting. You bring up how different administrations approach regulation, and they've all tried to cut unnecessary regulations in some way. Bush's regulatory overhaul focused more on how new regulations are created. Obama ordered regular reviews of the effectiveness of rules already on the books. Trump is focusing on rollbacks. From ProPublica, Robert Federici. From the New York Times, Daniel Ivory. Their joint investigation in yesterday's paper, The Deep Industry Ties of Trump's Deregulation Teams. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.